And then,
okay, it's starting.
Okay, great. Okay. Oops.
Okay. So, Heather, one of your programs in Sierra Leone is providing school uniforms for girls. How did you become aware that this was a serious issue?
So, in Sierra Leone, it differs slightly from some of the other African nations in the sense that many of the African nations, they don't have any provision in any of the ministries in the government to provide school fees or uniforms or even school shoes for the children. A few years ago, it was post-Civil War, so I want to say this is just a guess, but I want to say about the year 2000 to 2005, the war ended in 2001. The government passed some legislation in Sierra Leone that all of the children's school fees were paid for by the government, and that all the parent or custodian, guardian, sponsor had to do was provide the uniform and the school shoes and probably socks. So the average uniform is pretty inexpensive.
Okay.
So it helps more children go to school because they don't have to pay the fees on top of it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what other obstacles might girls, especially teenage girls, face with, continuing their schooling?
Okay.
Through their
high
school years or secondary years.
Okay. So in every poverty situation, you always are going to have higher levels of prostitution, higher levels of sexually transmitted diseases, HIV. Now we found out too that Ebola is actually a sexually transmitted disease, so we'll have to add that to the list. But a lot of times, and I know UNICEF has worked really hard in Sierra Leone with this because it's especially bad there, and because of the destitution of the Civil War and now with the Ebola crisis, a lot of parents actually sending their girls out to go bring in the money for the food for that day.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's the parents or the family that the child's staying with. So you find lots and lots of girls, the deeper you get away from the city where people are more educated and more into the rural pockets, in the provinces and the villages of the country, you find tons and tons of teenage pregnancies. Girls 15, 16, 17 years old, so they stopped, say, in grade 7, grade 8, and had their baby. And now there's a real push, a real movement to get these girls, after they've had their children, to get them to go back to school. Because Sierra Leone is a pretty, they're pretty aware of the rights that other people have in other parts of the world and what they're being starved of. So they don't want this anymore. And there's the Sierra Leoneans themselves, it's not just the international aid and the Western thought processes of empowering women, but it's also, the women in Sierra Leone themselves that are really proactive about getting their girls back to school. So you find that a lot, girls that have had children that they're being sponsored. Usually they were in a pretty destitute situation anyway, and then they got their baby. But those girls in particular, usually they're sponsored or someone's helping them somewhere, and they're being sent back to school. And then I think their education means so much more to them because they almost didn't get it. And they're very, very, very aware that without education, they can't really do anything in their country and they can't make proactive changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that this goes into this next question, but how might a girl's future be different from dropping out at 7th, 8th grade, like you're talking about, versus completing and graduating from secondary school?
Sure. So we do have the highest unemployment rate in all of West Africa in Sierra Leone. I've read some statistics that say it's about 80% most of the local people tell me that it's far higher. It's almost like nobody has a job. So people aren't looking at it like, well, it's pointless to get an education because there's no employment opportunities. They don't look at it like that at all. They look at it like the way forward is to treat the children like we care about them enough to have this education so that our country does not fall back into the same wrongful patterns that caused us to have slavery in the 1700s and 1800s, massive, grotesque civil war in 1990-2000, Ebola in 2014-2015. So they know that their country is quote-unquote behind the world in the sense that other parts of the world don't battle with these things, and they know that a large part of it is because their citizens aren't educated or that the corruption is so high that you'll find this a lot, like a young student just sleeps with her teacher to get certain marks, passes the grade 12, and then has less knowledge or information or understanding of anything than like a sixth grader. So, you know, and there's many other parts of Africa that they're doing a lot of serious anti-corruption stuff because they know that that's part of, it's an old part of the African system. It's not going to go away quickly, but that awareness needs to be turned on, and I just don't know. In Sierra Leone, they seem very slow to want to change that, so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so tell me what kind of job could a girl who graduated from grade 12, what kind of job would she be qualified to do? I mean, obviously, there is just a shortage of jobs to go around.
Right.
But is there something that, you know, younger girls can look forward to saying, well, if I graduate, like, I know I could maybe work as a teacher or some kind of nurse or something that doing that, graduating, would qualify you to do.
And thank you, because both of those things you brought up are very likely professions. In Sierra Leone, it's still very much like the early days of America, where there were those very specific jobs that women did. They were in the professional world. They were nurses, teachers, and what was the third? Secretaries, basically, right?
Administrative.
Right. But they were never like the boss. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a change, but the change is really slow. I would say in Sierra Leone, it's still pretty much the same way. You wouldn't see a woman doctor. Mm-hmm. You would see a woman nurse. You would never see a woman be the deputy head or the, you know, the head of the whatever school. It would all, the women are the teachers, and then the male is the principal or the head of the school. But that's still a step in the right direction, is getting women out in the workforce or having their eyes open to being suppressed and how it doesn't have to be that way anymore. That doesn't change what's already been, but things can change. They don't have to stay this way. And I forget what I was going to say. Oh, this is a very important point. Many of the international aid jobs, they've made a huge point in hiring women to do the lead positions, because most of the international aid comes from the UK or the Netherlands or Germany or the US or Canada or, you know, Switzerland, something. And those positions, a lot of times, they're open only really to women, which is also problematic in the sense of, if you're trying to make a statement or help women get ahead, many times a woman that doesn't have, like, the graces to take assume a position of power without becoming power hungry, greedy, it can actually be more detrimental than employing a man in that role, because the woman is using it as a power trip. Not that the man isn't, but I think that's something I've seen that a lot of the NGOs and the humanitarian aid has done that I don't necessarily, I think it's actually a step in the wrong direction with only putting a woman in these different high positions to have the gender equality. I think that the Africans are going to have to be the ones to sort out their gender issues ultimately. I don't think the West, it's not really, it's their issue. Mm-hmm. We can show them by example, we can show them strong women, good leaders, women that want to do well, want to promote change and the betterment of society without being on a power trip, mm-hmm. but we can't force them into that. Mm-hmm. They have to come to whatever is democracy in Africa is very, very different than what is democracy in America or any of the Western very young countries.
Mm-hmm. That's good. No, that was an interesting point, I think.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, these were some of the ones you had as well. But I think we talked about that, the secondary education being frowned upon for girls, you know, who have already experienced motherhood or teenage pregnancy.
It's no, thanks for bringing that up. It's, they are stigmatized, which is funny because they don't come to that on their own. A 15-year-old girl doesn't naturally go to the streets to sleep with a man to get money for her family, like I was explaining. It's usually the uncle or the aunt or the parent or the grandparent that's the head of the household mm-hmm. that sends out the children. And then in turn, sometimes they end up getting pregnant. It is always frowned upon. The difference in Sierra Leone that I think is very miraculous and gives a glimmer of hope is that in other parts of Africa that I've lived or worked, once a girl gets pregnant, she's done. She is finished. She is a housewife. She's a professional mother. Mm-hmm. Her chance in her education and her career and becoming part of the,
civil society?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're finished.
Yeah.
In Sierra Leone, the girls get a second chance. And SSAAP, Sim Monticello Sustainable Agriculture and Arts Program, which is the small nonprofit organization that I run. We are very, very happy and proud and so, so thankful to be able to help these girls because they are stigmatized, but at least they are given a second chance. In Zambia, once the girl is pregnant, she's done. The whole thing's over.
Okay, that was exactly the second one. So, so why is it important to provide uniforms? Why does it come down to the uniforms being a big step where you can help them stay in school?
Yeah, so the uniform, I've seen, like, the kids get up in the morning, they get up really early, and they, like, do some chores and stuff, wash with cold water unless there's a fire to, like, warm the bath water. Otherwise, they just, like, use cold water. And they put on their uniform, and something happens that you can almost see the change in them from when they're playing around in their, whatever, their little play clothes until when they put the uniform on, and then it's like they have somewhere they have to be. Mm-hmm. They have something that they have to do. They have responsibility to take. And because school is such a privilege, and not every kid gets to go to school, even though the government basically, is it subsidized? Said that they would pay for all of the children's mm-hmm. school fees.
Mm-hmm. Free schooling.
Free schooling. Yeah. The uniform still is the 10,000 leones, which is $2.38, current exchange rate, that very small amount of money to us is enough of a deterrent to many parents, especially ones that have like 10 kids. Mm-hmm. They still can't afford it. So school is still a huge privilege. And lots of kids don't go to school without their uniform. So if you don't have money for a uniform, you can't go to school, even if the school itself is free. Mm-hmm. And when these kids put on their uniform, they proudly walk to school, and they all love it, and it's very refreshing. because they've had to work so hard to go to school, and they know that they're very lucky, they really take it, they take it seriously, because they know, like, if they don't, it's just, you know, their parent or the teacher's going to kick them out and put another kid. There's so many kids that want to come to school, like, get rid of the ones that don't care. So the kids at school really want to, they want to make the most of what they've been given, you know?
That's good. Well, and now let's talk really how, and this, because remember the whole thing that prompted this was that article, which was written by a young girl in school talking about how the schools had opened back up since the Ebola virus had really taken over there, and how it was important for them to just be able to go back to school, like resume that sense of normalcy. But how do you see in the long term, how do you see having that, you know, national crisis affecting the education system?
Yeah. It's set them back years. Like, I know during the Civil War, the war got so bad toward, the war began in 1990. It didn't really start affecting the main, like, most of the people weren't affected until, like, 1995, because it was going on in the villages.
I'm just making sure it's still recording, yep.
It was going on in the villages. It wasn't really affecting people, the masses. And then as the war escalated, 1995, the war ended in 2001, some say 2002. I forget the question.
I said, how do you think long-term having that national crisis is going to affect
the
education system?
So I'm not on a tangent as much as it might seem. Mm-hmm. So during the war, I would say that they lost a couple years worth of school when the war got really bad, and that's why I brought up the war. Well, now when you look at it, there's kids who are 25 years old finishing their grade 12. They should be 17 or 18, just like in our system. Even a couple years away from school, which Ebola, it's still, I get text messages every day from my friend that sends quotes from the local newspaper. They're trying to get 42 days with no new Ebola cases and no hospital or like health center clinics that have any Ebola patients still in the beds. And they just, a couple days ago, got 9 new cases. So the World Health Organization requires 42 consecutive days, no new cases, no Ebola patients in any beds. Mm-hmm. I don't think parents are allowing their kids to go back to school. The lack of education, the lack of knowledge, the lack of medical care and science in Sierra Leone causes people to not understand, like, where did the disease come from? Well, nobody still knows that, even our scientists. But how do they prevent it, and what's to prevent it from happening all over again? So I read something that was, like, only 60% of the kids are even back in school. It's still a very low number. I wouldn't send my kid to school. It's still, there's Ebola still around, and school's a great place to catch it because there's germs everywhere. So it will be, like, half of a decade of a setback, just my prediction. It's not like it, you know, in Africa, the effects of things are really, they're pretty profound. Like, here we could probably snap things back together, get kids back to school. They just don't have the resources for that. And as long as that disease is still there, parents aren't going to send their kids to school the way that they used to.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's it. Thank you, Heather, for your time for this interview.
You want to make sure you've got everything.